Up first this hour, we are happy to welcome back to the program journalist and author, a two-time Pulitzer Prize nominee with the New York Times. He's the author of a number of books, including American Lightning, In the Enemy's House, and his terrific new book, The Spy Who Knew Too Much, An Ex-CIA Officer's Quest Through a Legacy of Betrayal. Howard Blum joins us on Downtown. Howard, thanks for being with us again.
My pleasure. Glad to be back.
This was such a wonderful book. There were at least a couple of occasions where I had to stop and remind myself that this was a work of nonfiction. It reads like such an incredible thriller.
Yeah, except the bullets in this book are real, and the people who get killed, these are real lives that are lost. It's not a movie.
No, absolutely not, and it's a fascinating story. What drew you to the story of Pete Bagley?
Well, I was fascinated by this man who served his country in the CIA, risked his life, came from a distinguished family, and yet he was victimized by our own intelligence service. He's sort of forced to retire after he's put under suspicion, even though he's totally exonerated. He's cleared. He's even given a promotion. But now his reputation has been tainted. So he leaves the agency, retires, and yet an event happens that pulls him back in, and he goes back in, begins this investigation because he's a patriot, because he cares what's happening to America. And that sort of character, to me, seemed so admirable that I wanted to write about him.
Well, and the event that really kicks things off is in September of 1978 in Chesapeake Bay. An unattended sailboat, the Brillig, is discovered. Clearly, there's been something that's gone on that boat. And then about 10 days later, a body washes up that is believed to be, or at least it's claimed initially, that it is a former CIA operative by the name of John Paisley.
Yes. First, when the boat goes aground, they investigate, the Coast Guard investigates the boat. They see bullet cartridges on the deck. They go below deck to the galley, and they find top secret CIA documents. And there is an electronic device, which is later identified as a burst transmitter. That's a classified device used for communicating with satellites. But there's no sign of the boat's owner, John Paisley, the CIA official. 10 days later, as you said, this body wrapped in 38 pounds of chains manages to surface to the water of the Chesapeake Bay. There's a bullet hole behind the left ear, and the CIA says this is an assassination. And they quickly have the body cremated, and they hope everything else about this case will go up in smoke, too. But a lot of questions remain. For example, was that body really Paisley? The first thing that you would normally do is check the fingerprints. Every CIA employee has his fingerprints on file. However, the CIA says, well, not so fast. We don't have Paisley's fingerprints. They somehow have disappeared. I used to say that, you know, in high school, the dog ate my homework. But here was the CIA trying to pass that off. And then how they explain that, how he committed suicide. Here's the CIA explanation. Paisley goes on deck. He wraps himself like a mummy in these 38 pounds of chains, trundles over to the side of the boat, has a gun in his right hand because he's right-handed, manages to somehow hurl himself off the deck, and while in midair, even though he's wrapped in chains, before he can hit the water, he reaches across his body to his left ear and shoots himself, and that way he commits suicide. It seems you'd have to be a bit of a gymnast to do that. It seems like the CIA's explanation is a bit contorted, too. And it's this event which brings my hero, Pete Bagley, back in to investigate what happened really to Paisley and how does this fit into the puzzle that he'd been investigating his entire career about a mole being embedded in the agency of a traitor. Working for the Russians in the highest levels of the CIA.
And that's, yeah, the ultimate in counterintelligence. And that's, to me, what makes the book so fascinating is learning about the things that the general public just doesn't know about the agency and the levels of deception, the double agents, the possible triple agents. And it really is like something out of a spy thriller.
Yes. You know, it's a world of intrigues, deceptions, and also grudges. There are different warring camps that Begley gets caught up in the middle in the CIA, and these differences in the CIA exist to this day. We're fighting the Cold War has now become a de facto hot war in the Ukraine, and the possibility of our secrets being stolen in this new hot war is a scary one.
We're talking with Howard Blum about his new book, The Spy Who Knew Too Much. There are so many fascinating characters in your book. You've done tremendous research on this. And one of the things that you unearthed in your research is the notion that maybe it would be good to reappraise the career and the reputation of James Angleton.
Yes, Angleton was the famed head of counterintelligence for the CIA. And he was a very aggressive counterintelligence agency. He was derided towards the end of his career for being paranoid. I think there are some excesses that, of course, he took part in, but I think he was more sinned against than sinning, as to use a Shakespearean phrase. I think he was of great service to this country, and he was out to protect it, and I think we've become too complacent. I think maybe we need people who are more committed to aggressive counterintelligence, as Angleton was.
Well, one of the key characters in Pete Bagley's search for the truth, and he's such a fascinating character, is a man by the name of Yuri Nosenko, who Bagley referred to as the Rosetta Stone. Can you talk a bit about him?
Sure. This harkens back to the Kennedy assassination. After JFK is assassinated, Pete Bagley is working in headquarters, and like most of the Soviet division, they're fixated on one mission, really, at this time. Was the KGB involved in the Kennedy assassination? Because, after all, Oswald had lived in the Soviet Union for quite a long time before he redefected back to the United States. What is the Soviet involvement? So while Bagley's trying to piece that out, an event occurs in Geneva. One of his old agents resurfaces. He puts an ad in the local paper, which is a bit of word code, a signal that let's get together, we have to meet. So Bagley hurries over to Geneva. The agreement is that they will open up the phone book in Geneva and find the first alphabetized cinema, movie theater, that'll be there. So Pete goes to the ABC cinema at 7:15, that's the appointed hour, and he sees Yuri there. Bagley is in a disguise because he doesn't know who's following Yuri. Maybe he hasn't evaded his Soviet handlers. Maybe he's even now turned on Bagley. So he now, though, has to pass to him where this meeting, where the debriefing will take place. Where is the safe house? And he can't really call it out to him. So he has to do something that's called a brush pass. And you learn this in CIA spy school, where the object is you have to walk past someone without breaking stride and deposit something in someone's pocket, this piece of paper with the message. And Pete executes this flawlessly. Nosenko gets the location of the new safe house. They go to the safe house. They meet up there. Nosenko quickly tries to polish off a full bottle of single malt scotch provided by the American taxpayers. And then after he's had these several drinks, he announces, I know exactly what was the KGB's involvement in Kennedy's assassination. I saw the files on Lee Harvey Oswald that were made both before the assassination by the KGB and afterwards. And I can categorically say that the KGB had no involvement. And this is great news. Bagley decides, because this will prevent most likely World War III. If Russia was involved, who knows what the circumstances would lead to. But then Bagley has to think, is this too coincidental for him to be telling me this? This is what I want to hear. And he could be telling me this for two reasons. One, because it's true, or two, because it's false. And if it's false, that means perhaps that the KGB was actually involved in the Kennedy assassination. So this is the wilderness of mirrors, as one spy master called it, that Bagley is living in. But it's apparent that he has to get Yuri back to the United States. And they get him back to the United States for this debriefing, preparing to take him before the Warren Commission so that he can say what he knows. But in the course of this interrogation, he realizes this spy is not telling me the truth. He's telling me lies and he's inventing stories. And now Pete and his superiors have to decide, what are we going to do with this guy? We've got him here. What do we do if he's telling us lies? And they decide right off that they can't take him to the Warren Commission. And while they're trying to figure out what to do with him, they send Nisenko off to Hawaii. They hire a redheaded prostitute to accompany him for this week in the sun in Hawaii. This romp in the sun is paid for by you and me, all the American taxpayers who are listening. And meanwhile, when he comes back, they decide to subject Yuri to a harsh interrogation. And the harsh interrogation, as their doubts grow, become harsher and harsher. And eventually, Nisenko is locked up in a specially designed 12-by-12 room in a CIA facility in the Virginia woods, Camp Perry. But he doesn't crack, and they don't really know what to do with him. Finally, the CIA is divided into two dissenting camps. There's Pete Bagley and his people who believe that Yuri is a planted Soviet agent to spread lies. There's another group that believes he's telling the truth. And this group wins. Yuri is taken out of this sort of prison. He's given $75,000 bonus and then put on the CIA payroll. And to this day, the CIA is divided into these two camps who believe Yuri was working for the Soviets or was a genuine defector, and the people who believe Pete Bagley was paranoid or Pete was a hero.
Well, it's truly a world where you can trust no one. Despite that, was there a level of perhaps grudging respect that Bagley might have for somebody like Nisenko?
Bagley did not have a professional's respect. He had utter disdain. He saw Nisenko as a man who was trying to undermine the country that he loved, and he couldn't respect his adversary at all. All he cared about was protecting America.
I was stunned at some of the revelations early on, I think in the first meeting they have, when Nisenko talked about some of the tactics the KGB would use, dropping powder into the coats of American diplomats, putting a substance on the roof of their cars that allowed them to be tracked. It was really some amazing things that they were working on.
Yes, and you know, in spy activities, you have to give away something good if you want to be believed. And Nisenko gave this because it would only be a matter of time, the Russians believed, before this was found out by another defector who had already come to America. So it's creating this illusion that you're being totally confident when you're really setting out to deceive. That's the work of a good double agent.
Well, I don't want to give anything away. I want people to read the book. It is so good. But suffice it to say that what Pete Bagley discovered at that cemetery in Moscow certainly changed and would change the way we look at our intelligence operations.
Yes. What Pete discovers that day is, again, I think the answer to the last great mystery of the Cold War, and it's a mystery that reveals a continuum of treason that exists to this day, into our new sort of de facto hot war. And that scene on a snowy day in front of the Novodevich Cemetery in Moscow is a very important moment in espionage history.
Did Pete at all feel redeemed at the end of his life?
Well, he felt, I think, that he carried on the good fight, that he didn't surrender. It would have been really easy for him to walk away. He had his pension. He had a very happy life. He loved his wife. He loved his children. He had lots of activities. And he could have said, well, who needs this trouble? Who needs to go back into these old wars? Who needs to put myself out to be besmirched, to be called paranoid again? Mm. But he did this. He put himself in this position because he wanted to get to the bottom of the things. He thought it was so important that America be protected. And that's why, in my eyes, I think he's a real, genuine American hero. He refused to surrender. He refused to take the easy path.
Our intelligence community has been under intense scrutiny for several years now. Howard, do we still have a need for covert operations?
We sure do. I mean, you know, look what's happening in the Ukraine today. We sure need agents there more than ever to find out what Russia is going to do next. I mean, we're talking about now the possibility of a nuclear war. You know, there's what's going to be the end game in the Ukraine? And if we become too successful, will Putin decide to use a tactical nuclear weapon? It sure would be good to know what's on Putin's mind. I mean, you can pick up the newspaper all the time, and you'll read reports, well, Putin has Parkinson's, Putin has cancer. It would be nice to have agents in place who really can tell our spy masters what's really going on, and the spy masters, their job is to provide intelligence to the decision makers who run the country.
What are the lessons we can learn from the story of Pete Bagley?
Well, I think the lesson is that the Russians are engaged in very aggressive counterintelligence. They are coming, you know, the way they tried to mess with our elections. Well, they're also trying to invasively attack our intelligence services. And we can't say this was just something that happened in the past. I think we have to focus on it now, and we have to be aggressive and have our counterintelligence actions focused. Right now, they're sort of diffused. We have a whole alphabet soup of different intelligence agencies having their own counterintelligence services. And I think this has to be centralized into one unified counterintelligence command to lead and direct these spy wars to make sure our intelligence agencies are not penetrated.
The book is called The Spy Who Knew Too Much. An ex-CIA officer's quest through a legacy of betrayal. It is a powerful, tremendous read. Howard Blum, thank you so much for being with us again today.
I appreciate you having me. Pleasure speaking with you.
Howard
Take
Blum
care.
With us. Thank you, Howard. Howard Blum with us on Downtown. Such a good book. Read it in one night. Couldn't put it down. Get it, and you'll learn some things you never knew about intelligence operations. It is something else. It's the stuff of movies, except even more twisted than you might have imagined.